101. What did we teach Beijing, you ask? We taught them a police state doesn't work. They thought it could, and they tried for 50 years to bring Hong Kong to heel, using every tool that came along. Buying people, using CCTV cameras and facial recognition, propaganda, phalanxes of police and army, drone surveillance, drone strikes. And all of that just made the people of Hong Kong more resolute to keep what we had. Why do you say that? Of course what we had was real, because hegemony is real. That's a feeling, and feelings are something your culture explains to you. We in Hong Kong have a very particular culture and feeling. We lived as servants of the British, and we know very well what it felt like to be subaltern to a hegemonic power. That only lasted a few generations, but it set a particular feeling here, right in people's hearts. Never again. So when the British turned us over to Beijing, fine. We are Chinese. Beijing is Chinese. But we are also Hong Kong. It creates a kind of dual loyalty. Part of that is we speak Cantonese, while Beijing speaks Putonghua. Mandarin to some Westerners, although that's actually an elite or written version of Putonghua. But never mind, we were different. We speak Cantonese. We are Hong Kong. Yes, of course there were Hong Kong people in favor of joining Beijing completely. These people often got money from Beijing, but I'm sure it was a genuine feeling for some of them. But most of us were for one country, two systems, just as the saying had it. Our system, many of us call it rule of law. Laws in Hong Kong were written and passed by the legislature, enforced by the police, and ruled on by the courts. That's why the world trusted us with their money. Beijing didn't have that. They only had the party. What got decided behind the closed doors of their standing committee became their equivalent of the law, but it was a rule only. Rule without law. And it couldn't be challenged. It was arbitrary. That's why when Beijing tried to build Shanghai as their own finance center to counter us, it didn't work. The world didn't trust Shanghai the way they trusted Hong Kong. So we in Hong Kong fought for it. We fought for the rule of law. All through the years between 1997 and 2047, we fought. Why 2047? The deal was that on July 1st, 2047, we were to be folded entirely into the Republic of China. That was the British kicking the can down the road. They were not the worst empire by any means, but they were definitely an empire. And all empires are bad. So they struck that deal with Beijing, which had it that for 50 years, we were to be one country, two systems. And during those 50 years, we in Hong Kong got used to fighting for our rights. Part of that meant going out into the streets and demonstrating. Over the years, we saw what worked and refined our methods. Violence didn't work. Numbers did. That's the secret, in case you are looking for the secret to resisting an imperial power, which was what we were doing through those years. Non-violent resistance of the total population, or as much of it as you can get. That's what works. Yes, of course Beijing could have crushed us. They could have killed every person in Hong Kong and repopulated the city with people from mainland China who didn't know any better and would have been happy to take over such a nice infrastructure. Not that they would have known how to operate it. Still, this joke that a Western acquaintance once told me about the government dismissing the people and electing another one, that was no joke to us, because Beijing could have done that. It's kind of what they did to Tibet. But there were constraints on Beijing too. For one thing, they were always trying to entice Taiwan back into the fold. One part of that effort was to say to Taiwan, "You'll be fine if you join us. We'll treat you just like we treat Hong Kong. One country, two systems. And if you come back to us, three systems. Let 100 flowers bloom." But that argument would only work if they were indeed treating Hong Kong well. Yes, there were other reasons that weren't so convincing to Taiwan, of course. There are always multiple causes, always. In this case, there was always June 4th. Tiananmen Square, 1989. now known also as May 35th, or April 66th, or all the way around the calendar, although the joke gets old and even hard to calculate. And besides, every one of those dates is now blocked on the mainland internet, of course. Because Beijing wants to erase that day from history. And though it seems like that can't really happen, in fact, it is more possible than you might think. At least on the mainland. The world remembers it for China. And Beijing definitely did not want another such incident in the 21st century, when the whole thing would have been recorded by every phone and broadcast worldwide. No. Murdering the citizens of Hong Kong was not an option. Sure, the billions occupation of Beijing helped us, no doubt about it. That was huge. And of course, part of why that happened was that the mainland's illegal internal migrant population saw how we did it in Hong Kong and decided to do it themselves, right in Beijing. And of course, the party was terrified. How could they not be? The people without proper hukou, without residency papers for where they lived, did all the dirty work in China. And there were about 400 million of them when the occupation happened. That's a lot of people without any feeling of representation or belonging. So yes, the party had to deal with that, or lose everything. In that struggle, Hong Kong became a smaller matter, and had some wiggle room, you might say, which we used very smartly. It was never about independence, you must understand that. It was only for one country, two systems. For the rule of law that we had here to persist past 2047. Yes, of course Beijing had other big problems. And as I said, they couldn't just kill us off. That left only talk, the discursive battle. And happily, we people of Hong Kong recognized this and banded together. Solidarity. There's no feeling like it. People talk about it. They use the word, they write about it, they try to invoke it. Naturally. But to really feel it, you have to be part of a wave in history. You can't get it just by wanting it. You can't call for it and make it come. You can't choose it. It chooses you. It arrives like a wave picking you up. It's a feeling. How can I say it? It's as if everyone in your city becomes a family member, known to you as such, even when you have never seen their face before and never will again. Mass action, yes. But the mass is suddenly family. They are all on the same side, doing something important. How did that play out in reality? What, didn't you see? Have you forgotten? We took to the streets every Saturday for 30 straight years. Of course, sometimes it was more intense and other times less so. Often we let the young people do it. The idealism of youth is very good at persisting in such things. Young people want something to believe in, of course. Everyone does, but the young aren't yet used to not getting it, so they persist. And they can handle the physical stresses of it better. But whenever push came to shove, we older people would come back out onto the streets also. As July 1st drew even closer, we got back out onto the streets such that on some Saturdays the entire population of Hong Kong was out there. Those were stupendous events. Yes, there were other things we had to do also, of course. These were not so exciting. In fact, they were often tedious, but they needed to be done. Eventually, you have to recognize that many necessary things are boring, but also, quite a few things are both boring and interesting at the same time. So we went to meetings. We joined the neighborhood councils. We went to the HK legislature and did all the things that being part of a citizenry requires. It wasn't just the demonstrations, although that was part of it. There was also kinds of work to be done. And we did it. You have to pace yourself for the long haul. No, they didn't give it to us. Don't put it that way. Your questions are kind of offensive. I'm not sure if you are aware of that or not, but whatever. I will answer you politely because I know the difference. So eventually, what I think happened is we just wore them down. They couldn't beat us. They had not the hegemony to to do that. In fact, now some people say we beat them. These are the tail wags dog people, who think our sterling example will eventually transform all mainland China into one big Hong Kong. No, I myself don't think that's right. It goes too far. China is too big, and the party elites are too convinced they are right. I'm more in the camp that gets called tail wags dog's butt. This is more realistic, even to the image itself. When a dog wags its tail, even when it is most excited, it's only the butt that also moves with the tail, not the whole dog. That wouldn't make sense, just in the physical sense. You can see that when you look at any dog, even one in a frenzy of happiness. Only the butt wags with the tail. The head and chest stay steady. So, it's the same with China. The Cantonese speaker part of China is in the south. It's Guangdong, a very big and prosperous province in South China, centered on the city of Guangzhou. Used to be spelled Canton in English. And there are 100 million of us who speak Cantonese, and it's an older dialect than Mandarin. And most of the Chinese who live elsewhere in the world speak it, and we in Hong Kong speak it. Also in Shenzhen, the special economic zone, where Beijing tried to piggyback on Hong Kong's success in the world. So Beijing made a big mistake when they tried to suppress Cantonese as a language, which they did for many years, because that meant all of Guangdong didn't believe in Beijing either. They were more with Hong Kong than with Beijing, even if they never did much to show it. But language is family. Language is the real family. What has been the upshot? Well, it's a work in progress. But since you ask so politely, I will say that since July 1st, having agreed to keep one country, two systems in Hong Kong, Beijing also has had to grant more and more rights to Guangdong. And they definitely don't mess with the Cantonese language anymore. Of course, they said this change of policy was made just to integrate South China better into the country at large. But really, it was done to turn what had been a defeat into a victory. Or at least put it to use. Which Beijing, it has to be said, is very good at doing. They cross the river by feeling the stones. Still, in this case, the tail wagged so vigorously that it wagged the dog's butt, too. That I will grant. You can see how that works just by telling your dog it's time to leave the apartment and go for a run.